Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Tuesday, October 4th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the words Start Here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 18 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it out, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one that can serve as a tutorial for you, because in those shows, people have been stepped through that worksheet process and or given powerful testimonials about how the use of these tools has positively impacted their life. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It also contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often, because it tends to improve the quality of their lives, and it tends to promote comments, questions, answers, or testimonials. If you have any of those to share with us, please do so by calling 563-999-3581 or sending us an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeanie@whyagain.org and let us know how we can support you. So, what's on your mind? Where have you been? What are you struggling with? What are you having great success with? How can we support you in using these tools or getting clarity about these tools at a different level? Today is a Tuesday, which means another opportunity for you to join us in a Mindshifter support group, 6:30 to 9 p.m. this evening, Central Time. Most Tuesdays and Thursdays, we have these meetings, and we encourage you to either join us yourself or pass the information along to somebody you know that might benefit from attending the group. And like Michael says, the intention he has is to get these tools into the hands of every mind, heart, and being on the planet, whether they have any money to pay for it or not. And he also acknowledges that as one person or just a team of two people, he and Jeannie, they aren't going to be able to reach 7 billion or more people one-on-one. So everybody who steps into that role of sharer or teacher, they find it greatly gratifying, and they're quick to acknowledge you for that. So if there's some way you can join us or someone that you can pass this information along to that you feel they would benefit from joining us, please do so. For the support group, all the information people need to know to join us absolutely free is available on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website. And there's a separate information page for the login ID for Tuesday and Thursday. So, what's on your mind? How can we support you? What has been of benefit to you so far in the recent days as we were going through the Way of Mastery? What kind of questions has it brought up for you, if any? 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, I'll turn on your microphone and announce you by your area code. Where we left off yesterday as we were reviewing lesson 22 is where the work is talking to us about an insane mind. An insane mind is one that will not work at cultivating deep self-honesty. An insane mind will wrap itself in sheep's clothing, will think that it really is its thoughts about itself. It will identify with the ego. And this entire lesson, lesson 21 and lesson 22, are based on learning the invitation to cultivate deep self-honesty. In the middle of the page on lesson 260, on page 266 in lesson 22, it says, learn to cultivate self-honesty. And though it sounds like a simple thing, this does take time. Because the mind has used its own power to be in denial about its own creations. Or miscreations, as the text reads. We're living in a space, we're existing in a space where our consciousness has to be filtered through the input of the five senses. And yet the input of the five senses is extremely limited. What our five senses can register is only a tiny fraction of all the energies that even our science knows is available. And our science is learning more things every year. But our science already knows that our eyes only perceive about 1% of the electromagnetic spectrum, light waves, etc. And that our ears only hear a very small range of the vibratory frequencies, and that our physical sense of touch is very, very limited. Stuff out there that we know of, but we can't register with our senses, and there's probably an infinite amount more that we aren't aware of that doesn't register in our senses that we don't even have scientific instrumentation to register. Now, why do we say that? Well, because even our best science these days, the models they have for the universe and how it works with gravity and light waves and light particles, et cetera, estimates that 80% of the mass and matter and energy in the universe is stuff they haven't even been able to track yet. They call it dark matter, dark energy. And the reason they call it dark is not because of its color, it's because they haven't yet developed the scientific measuring devices that can register it. So here we have a mind that even within the realm of what we've already lived through, we hide most of it from our conscious awareness because we need to be able to focus on the car where we're driving, and we need to be able to focus on the work they're paying me to do at this office, which is to, you know, input data in the computer system or add this column of numbers or write this column for this newspaper or promote this new integrative mental health summit that's happening this weekend or whatever it is. We do not have the bandwidth, to use a computer term, we do not have the range of thought capacity to hold all of these things in our mind at the same time. And so most of the stuff we've lived through, we hide from ourselves. And the invitation in this lesson is to learn to cultivate self-honesty. And though it sounds like a simple thing, just be honest with yourself. Just remember what you've gone through. Just don't judge yourself negative. Oh, that's fine. I can do that. No, not so easy. Why? Because I have spent decades of my life using my mind power to hide from myself the thoughts and images and reactions and emotions that I've created in response to my interacting with life. And I label things as that's bad, that's wrong, that's a negative thought, that's a shameful thought, that's not a spiritual thought, that I shouldn't do that, I should do this more, I don't want to admit that I did that when I was 12 or 15 or when I was 27. And the text reads, though it sounds like a simple thing, this does not easily happen because the mind has used its own power to be in denial about its own miscreations. It does not want to own them. It does not want to embrace them. It wants very much for you and for itself to believe that it is really a very high spiritual person. It will wear the sheep's clothing of the ego, the persona or the mask, the self-image, the projected image out into the world. And it will cling to that like a robe around the body held against the cold winter wind. And it will cling to it no matter what. Such a mind is an insane mind. And an insane mind is hurtful. An insane mind limits the flow of love through it that could heal itself and this world. Therefore, beloved friends, as we move toward the close of the way of transformation, we again bring the arrow back to point at ourselves. That line is probably one of the most important lines in this entire book. Bring the arrow back to point at ourselves, to the depth of the mind, and learn to observe it. Turn the mind back on itself. Use your intellect for perhaps its one truly useful purpose, which is to see how every time you hold a piece of advice for somebody else, while it might be good advice for them, it's the perfect advice for you. To another, you've already decided you were guilty of that. Turn the focus of your mind and your intellect back on itself to watch its own manipulations, its own machinations, and understand that the pain, the fear, the sadness, the hurt, the resentment, the bitterness, the grief, the anger that you experience is your own creation in each moment. And when you can see that, when you can feel the depth of that, and then you realize that you are not pleased with what you are experiencing in the moment, now in that next moment, you have the freedom, you have the liberty to choose again. And you'll see how you're creating the pain, the fear, the sadness, or the thing that you don't want to experience, and you'll see instantly how to release it and create a different experience. When you do that, you open your mind to be the seamless conduit for the love, for the energy of creation, for the Christ mind that could actually heal this world and heal your mind. The text goes on and says, therefore, beloved friends, as we move toward the close of the way of transformation and we bring the arrow back to point at ourselves to the depths of the mind and we learn to observe it, take the list of questions we've offered to you and repeat it on a daily basis. Simply come back to the questions from a few pages before and ask yourself, have I hated myself? Have I hated God? Have I had murderous thoughts? Have I despised myself? Have I had disrespectful sexual fantasies? Have I been trying to manipulate another mind in order to gain what I believed I needed? And have I had any of those thoughts recently? Bring those thoughts to your mind each day. Take that list of questions that we've offered to you and simply repeat the process on a daily basis. Invite yourself into the truth of what you hold in your mind. Invite your mind to offer up to you the things you've told it you're too scared or hurt or shamed or bitter or resentful to look at. As you continually ask yourself to be shown what you're hiding from yourself, you demonstrate to those fearful parts of your mind that you are willing to see what you have been hiding from yourself. The text goes on and says, so you see, we first began in the safety of allowing you to look way, way into the past to see if any of that had ever been going on in your mind. Now we come closer and closer to the self-honesty of what is occurring in the mind right here, right now, so that each day you ask the same questions and you see what the answer is. A daily practice. You heard Michael Rice talk about a daily practice. You heard Guy Finley talk in his lessons about here's an exercise. Here's a daily exercise we're going to give you. Why are these people talking about daily work, daily practice? Because daily, moment to moment, we are creating our experience of life. And the invitation with all of these great spiritual teachings is to become conscious of our practice of creation. For most of our lives, we are unconsciously creating, and we're taught to blame our experience on others. The text continues and says, in this way, the mind will become more and more transparent. You will learn to look upon your murderous thoughts and all of those hideous spiritual things that you've tried to shove down into the basement. More and more, as you tell yourself the truth about them. And more, as you find a friend or two who's willing to tell the truth about their own minds with you, the more the mind becomes transparent, and the less and less you have any need to hide. A mind no longer committed to hiding becomes transparent to itself, and through it, the power of the Christ can begin to move. It can move with certainty, with knowledge, with grace, and with compassion. The mind has always been the problem, but not the entirety of the mind. Just a small corner that has been fenced off and called the ego. When you became identified with only that part of the mind, you became egocentric. The center of your identity became the ego, and that is the source of the problem. Quite frankly, it is like identifying with a pimple on the skin and then defending the pus within it at all costs. What does that mean? That means your thoughts about yourself that make up your ego are in error. They are what was trained and conditioned into you, and you are part of a long line of people in your bloodline who've been trained to misperceive to be self-righteous, to think that they understand what's truly going on in life when they're only able to perceive a fraction of 1% of a fraction of 1% of what's hitting their senses. So my thoughts about myself, my ego, has no more value than the pus in a pimple. And yet, most of us have had the experience of defending ourselves and our thoughts about ourselves and fighting for being right. Again, this is why each and every seven-step reality management worksheet invites us to say, I cancel my need to be right. I cancel my need to make up another story out of these brain cells to hallucinate the proof that my fear and my hostility-based story, my reality, is true. The text goes on and says, silence is the doorway that will dissolve that pimple and that pus forever. Now, I talked about this earlier. The silence they're talking about here is not just I train my mind to have no thoughts running through it. The silence we're talking about here is I learn to see that the thoughts I've created about myself and given such value to are based on distorted perceptions. They aren't the truth of myself. They aren't the truth of my life. They aren't the truth of life itself. And when I see them as false, that's when this thing they're calling silence comes into my experience. Silence is arrived at in many ways, says the text, but the principal cornerstone is deep self-honesty. The act of transformation, then, the way of mastery is the act of transformation. It is a process whereby you put the squeeze on the pimple of the ego and you no longer care what pus comes out because you just want to be done with it. I don't really care what horrible thoughts and memories and trauma energies I bump into as I go spelunking in the cave of my mind. I just want to see it all, see the truth of it, and get on with my life rather than creating and then defending these stories of drama and trauma and victimhood and self-righteousness and righteous indignation. I just want to move on in the flow of life as a spectator of the glorious expanse of creation moving in, through, as, and around me. The text goes on and says, self-honesty is the greatest act of love that you will ever experience within yourself. It is greater than any sexual union. Please pay attention. No one is putting down sexual union or the pleasure that we can have sexually when we use our bodies with another human being. That's not the point here. What we're saying is there's something even more magnificent. The sexual union pleasure is fabulous. It's magnificent. It's a part of the human existence. And more. Not But, and it's greater than any adulation of the world, greater than any mystical experience, is the love that you will experience within yourself when you've reached complete self-honesty and openness. The text goes on and says, the embracing of deep self-honesty, the mastery of it, is the greatest act of love that the mind can experience. For in perfect self-honesty, the world is transcended, fear is dissolved, and enlightenment is present. And in enlightenment, there is remembrance of perfect innocence in union with all of creation. Therefore, indeed, beloved friends, you who want in truth to come to know Christ, look not outside yourself, for the kingdom, capital K kingdom, is within. The mind is your domain, and the mind is your true self. It has certain components, such as the emotional component or expression, an egoic component or expression. The ego in itself is not right, not wrong, not good, not bad. It simply is. The mistake, the knot in the rope, the blip on the screen, is merely the mistaken identification of yourself with the ego. Again, they talked about it in a variety of different ways. The ego is just a very simple, very useful tool. At one point it calls it, it says, please pardon the expression, a very stupid tool. It's not stupid in a pejorative or negative sense. It means like a hammer. The hammer doesn't possess its own independent intelligence. Right? So you could say the hammer is a really stupid tool, because if you leave a hammer next to a pile of boards, really good, really beautiful boards with some nails, and say, hey, build me this bookshelf for my room, it doesn't happen. There's no innate intelligence contained in the hammer. So you could say the hammer is a very stupid tool. The hammer is a very simple tool. That's what they're getting at when they say the ego is a very stupid tool. It's not a bad tool. It just doesn't do anything on its own. It doesn't contain its own intelligence. And it only becomes a problem for me when I misidentify that pattern of thoughts that we call the ego as my true nature. The text goes on and says, when I misidentify myself as the ego, that is what creates a tension, a twisting of the rope that ends up distorting everything. You end up being in judgment of yourself because you had a sexual thought yesterday. Heaven forbid. You judge yourself because you feel a little angry. You judge yourself because a thought goes through the mind like, quote, what's the point of being on the planet? Close quotes. And as long as you're identifying with those thoughts, you're in trouble. Because you are not your thoughts about yourself. You are far more grand and expansive than any thought or pattern of thoughts. You are unlimited spirit. That's the title of Lesson 13. So when you identify with those thoughts, you are in trouble. The text goes on and says, but when you see them as just an innocent flow, a temporary movement of energy through a vast domain called the mind, then you know that you are free. You begin to taste the spaciousness and the silence that always is around the edges of everything that arises in the mind. You begin to become identified with that spaciousness, with that peace. And there, wisdom returns gently. You begin again to remember that you were created to create. And creation is extension, not projection. Extension is that which floods or extends outward the good, the holy, and the beautiful. When all that happens, you no longer make justifications for not taking action to extend compassion to other minds in the world, but rather you begin to wrap yourself around this world, around this planet, even around this universe. And you proclaim and you know in the depth of your being that you are the holy offspring of creation. And you will not settle for less than creating the experience of heaven on earth. No longer do the problems seem so large or complex because you abide in a state of truth and knowledge that is bigger than the world. For you know that through you, creation can do anything. If you will direct your attention, if you will open up the floodgates and allow it to happen, you begin to step into the greatest piece of power that there is, the greatest place of power that there is. This is truly what was meant, even in your Christian religion, that Christ returned to heaven and sat at the right hand of the Father. The one who sits at the right hand is the chief of staff, the one who makes it all happen. To sit at the right hand of the Creator is to allow your mind to abide in right-mindedness. And in right-mindedness, you see no separation between yourself and your brothers and sisters, which means you see no separation between yourself and the world. Getting to heaven is no longer an attraction. Bringing heaven to this world is. Bringing light to darkness is all that matters. Constantly desiring to bring greater light to your own darkness is the way in which you live moment to moment, desiring greater light, and greater light. You might have missed this, right? You might start thinking these grand thoughts about, oh, I'm going to bring light to the world. I'm going to be the Christ. If we come back to this paragraph, right in the middle of it, it slips in this, constantly desiring to bring greater light to your own darkness is the way in which you live moment to moment. You're not bringing light into the world. It's here. It's you. What you're doing is turning the focus of your conscious awareness, which is the light of your awareness, into all of the corners of your mind that contain things that you hate and that you were troubled by and that you judged negatively about yourself. That's what they're talking about here. Person, mind-specific honesty, turning the focus of my mind back onto itself. Getting to heaven is no longer an attraction. Bringing heaven to this world is. Bringing light to darkness is all that matters. I'm not bringing my light to someone else's darkness. I'm bringing the light of my awareness to the things I'm hiding from myself within my mind. Constantly desiring to bring greater light to your own darkness is the way in which you live moment to moment. And you do that by desiring greater light, and greater light. Here's the suggested quote. What do I need to let go of? How deep can my self-honesty go? Notice, they didn't say, what does Sally need to let go of? What does the ex-president need to let go of? What mistakes are my neighbors making? It says, what do I need to let go of? How deep can my self-honesty go? How wide can my compassion for life itself spread? What actions am I actually taking in this world? What am I defending? What am I afraid of? Am I willing to become so powerful a conduit for Christ that I take responsibility for the atonement and tell Yeshua to move aside? That's the end of the quote. That's the suggested series of questions. The atonement, if it is not done within my mind, doesn't exist for me. And no one else can force me to look at the parts of my mind that I'm hiding from myself. My free will cannot be usurped. You have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each moment. And it is the focus of your conscious awareness in each moment that creates your experience of life in that moment. The text goes on and says, for the mind that's in right-mindedness serves only the voice for creation. It no longer has any interest in defending the voice of egocentricity. Therefore, beloved friends, for the next 30 days, practice self-honesty. Utilize the questions we have given you each. Also, merely sit down with a pad of paper and pen and ask yourself the following question. What thoughts have gone through my mind this day? The text goes on and says, if you want, you can draw a line through the paper down the center. And on one side, put what you would label loving thoughts, and on the other side, what you would label unloving thoughts. And please remember, those are just your own judgments. And then see what comes up. In truth and reality, in the physical domain and dimension, no one is without what you would call unloving thoughts. Why? Because the mind is a vast space through which thoughts, like radio waves, are passing constantly. Quite frankly, and we have spoken to you of this before, quite frankly, in the end, you do not really know who is doing the thinking. You're only aware of a thought arising in the mind. And then your ego says, I am this and I am not that. That thought must be mine. That thought must be yours. That's your ego talking. That's not any absolute truth. The text goes on and says, in truth, you're all swimming in the same sea, and there is merely thought arising and passing away. You do have the power to discern and select which thoughts will hold value for you. But it is impossible to push away what you have decided to judge as unspiritual thoughts. Can you imagine becoming so free that when a murderous thought arises, it makes you laugh and you tell the truth? As in, quote, ah, when you reached across the table and you ate the potato chip off my plate, I saw an image of taking a huge axe and cutting your hand off and making you eat your own fingers. Huh, what a thought! Close quotes. Now, just think about it. We've already had people call in and respond to this and say, I don't think the world is ready for that. I don't think that's a good thing to act on those thoughts. And please go slowly and recognize what they're saying. They're not saying, take an axe and cut someone's hand off. They're saying, we all swim in the same sea, and there is merely thought arising. It's not my thought or your thought until somebody labels it as mine or yours, good or bad, right or wrong. It's just energy passing through this field of energy we call mind. Now, each of us does have the power to discern and select which thoughts will hold value for you. Oh, I love that thought. Oh, I hate that thought. We get to decide. each of us differently. But it is possible for you to discern and select which thoughts will have value for you. It is also impossible for you to push away what you have judged as bad, negative, unspiritual, hateful. These thoughts can and will pass through the field of energy you call your mind. So they're asking us to think how difficult it would be after we've been conditioned for decades, most of us at this point in our lives, to hide from ourselves and from others our negative or our vengeful or our hateful thoughts or our deeply unspiritual thoughts or our sexual fantasy thoughts. So imagine how difficult it would be to move to the place of such out loud. Oh, the thought I'm telling myself now is I should take an axe and cut off your hand because you stole a potato chip off my plate. Isn't that wild? I can't remember the last time I had a thought so violent. That would be a very, very difficult space for most of the people hearing this to get to, because most of the people who are hearing this reading of the Way of Mastery with commentary are working to become more loving and working to become more spiritual and working to birth the mind of Christ. And so they're thinking, oh, the Christ mind would never have a thought like that. What they're saying is, yes, all of that exists. And the Christ mind knows better than to judge that as bad or wrong. It also knows it doesn't have to be driven by that little ripple of energy moving through the mind. The text goes on and says, for it is the embrace with perfect honesty that returns the mind to sanity. It is the refusal to be honest that creates the conflict and tension in the mind that is called insanity. And insanity is a state in which the mind is not at peace. And then Christ cannot enter a mind, a field of energy that is not at peace. Because the Christ mind is the allowance, the acceptance, the surrender, the embracing, the trusting of everything that flows in creation. The text goes on and says, many of you have come from a tradition of Catholicism. Within it, there is a practice called confession. This practice that we're talking about in this lesson is really that idea of confession. Although, of course, in the Catholic world, it has been used to place guilt, and that is not the point. Confession means to be willing to be honest. And the priest is meant to be a representation, a symbol of God or the Christ mind, so that you could sit in your little box, which is really a symbol of your own internal privacy, your own mind, and tell the truth to your higher self. Own it, allow it, embrace it, comfort yourself if it feels uncomfortable. Telling the truth to your higher S self, capital S self, to the capital S self that loves you anyway, to the mind of creation that embraces all things and thereby transcends all things. Now, in truth, that mind, the Christ mind, the mind of the Creator, will not tell you go off and do penance, do 947,000 Hail Marys, and go and sweep the city streets. The mind of the Christ mind, the mind of the Creator, will simply say, beloved child, you are forgiven already. In other words, I don't hold false perceptions of you the way you have held false perceptions of you. Remember, the word forgiveness in this work is the dismantling of false perceptions. So the Christ mind, the mind of the Creator, will simply say, beloved child, that is not who you are. I have never seen you the way you are seeing yourself. I see the truth of you. I see the shimmering radiance of creation expressing in form. The text goes on and says, for you have returned to sanity by merely confessing or being honest to the deepest part of yourself what has arisen and passed away within the lower mind. The lower mind is the mind associated with the body or the field of temporality, and that part of that mind that we call the ego. It is just like going to the depth of the ocean, into the silence thereof, and saying, yes, I was just out there on the tip of the foam of the wave, and I was a part of a lot of chaos out there. How about that? And the ocean remains as it has always been. Lack of honesty in self leads to lack of honesty in relationship. And lack of honesty in relationship creates the tension and appearance of separation and guilt, which is the very nemesis that the soul is seeking to overcome. Self-honesty, then, the return to perfect peace, requires, in the end, the cultivation of openness. Now, they use the word vulnerability here, and I substitute the word openness for that, simply because in our language, vulnerability implies the ability to be hurt, and the essence of this work is that your true self cannot be hurt. So, the text reads, and I substitute the word openness for their word vulnerability. The text reads, self-honesty, then, the return to perfect peace, requires in the end the cultivation of openness for, quote, in my perfect openness, I find my perfect safety. The text goes on and says, the open are the meek, and those who have returned to their own innocence and know that the opinions and judgments of others cannot harm them. They live merely honest within themselves, without pretense, without image, and no longer concerned with that world, the insane world of judgment and perception and dishonesty, hiding and projection. They become more and more a conduit through which the power and love of the Creator begins to work. And through them, other minds are reached. Unbeknownst to them, they become a living, walking, in parentheses, as long as the body lasts, close parentheses, conduit through which grace is transferred to other minds. And in the presence of such a one, other minds heal spontaneously. I'm adding here, if they wish to, if they can see the truth of their nature, that the outpicturing that they're being shown is their truth, then they will heal spontaneously. The text goes on and says, other minds are attracted to such a being, not because they're doing anything, not because these other beings perceive themselves as great, but because they know that only creation itself is great. There is no longer a self, little s self, that they're trying to defend. Everything becomes merely a context in which they can be used by the Holy Spirit to bring about the atonement. They walk in the world unknown by the world, unseen by the world. They seem very ordinary, and they merely do as love asks them to do. Listening to this, you are birthing Christ. Nothing can prevent it from occurring now. Merely trust each moment. Surrender into each moment. Embrace your commitment to what actually is, capital R, reality, what Michael Rice would call actuality. Teach only love to yourself by loving that which you have hated and judged. let that sink in. The text reads, teach only love to yourself by loving, embracing, accepting, allowing, and trusting that which you have hated and judged. By allowing yourself to feel and to know that which is passing through the mind and body anyway. Release your judgments. Release the perceptions that generate upset. Embrace it. See your ordinary humanness not as an obstruction to peace, but as that through which peace can be extended. See yourself as the conduit for the creative energy to be extended in form. So that second to last paragraph in this lesson then says, teach only love to yourself by loving that which you have hated and judged. Dismantle, forgive. Dismantle your perceptions. Forgive. Same meaning. Forgive, dismantle perceptions. Dismantling perceptions, forgiveness. Teach only love to yourself by loving that which you have hated and judged, by allowing yourself to feel and to know that which is passing through the mind and body anyway. It's just an energy field. It isn't right or wrong, good or bad, up or down, until I label it as such. I don't have to let these thoughts, these energies, drive my behavior. They are not my true nature. My thoughts about myself are not myself. I'm free to embrace this. I'm free to embrace the part of me that I hated and judged. I'm free to see that my ordinary existence, my ordinary humanness, is not an obstruction to peace, but it is that through which that peace can be extended in the world. I can become a conduit for the good, the holy, and the beautiful. I can resist the urge to move into my intellect and try to figure it out. I can pause, take a breath every time I feel the tightness and tension, turn the focus inside myself and ask, how am I creating this upset? What am I making this situation mean? How can I be a blessing to myself and others in this moment? How can I extend the good, the holy, and the beautiful in this next moment? The text finishes up with, beloved friend, there is a great depth treasure awaiting you if you will put the message of this lesson into practice with passion, even zealousness, and with full commitment to your own Christedness, to see that, quote, you are worthy, close quotes, of the deepest honesty that you can reach, that you can confess, and that you can live. For ultimately, the deepest, honest truth is, I and my Creator are one. I am Christ eternal. Beloved friends, be you therefore at peace this day. Have fun with these exercises. Earlier they told us, listen, let not seriousness enter the mind. Oh, but we just said you're supposed to have this deepest honesty, this passion, this zealousness. Play with it. Both can be true. Remember that one of the hallmarks of any deep truth is that its opposite is also true. Remember that much of what would seem to be oppositional, paradoxical, impossible to our intellectual mind, in truth, is the actuality of our lives. So, beloved friends, be you therefore at peace this day. Have fun with the exercises we have given you, and know that you are love. Amen. So there's our second read-through with commentary of Lesson 22 of The Way of Mastery, Self-Honesty, the Greatest Act of Love. And we have some time for comments or questions, answers or testimonials. We've got about 5 minutes left. And we'd be happy to entertain any such comments or questions. 563-999-3581. Call that number. Press 1. Let us know how that's landing for you. Let us know if you've had any, if you've taken any time to try to be self-honest at deeper levels in the past couple of weeks that we've been working with these lessons. What's it been like? Good results, bad results, no results. I was working with somebody earlier today who had some mixed results. Area code 760, you're in the air, I hope.
Hi, this is Dan. Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Hello, Ann.
Usually I'm in Florida, but I'm up visiting and dog sitting my three grand dogs. Well, my daughter is off to a wedding over the weekend, but then they also got sick. But if you're going to get sick, why not be in a castle, right? Anyway, yesterday I was listening to what you were reading, and just before that, I had had thoughts of, oh, when she gets home, what is she going to say? Things aren't perfect, blah, blah, blah. And I went on, and then I'm listening, you know, and taking in what the lesson is saying. And I go, oh, wait, erase all that. You know, whatever happens, happens. Just allow it to happen and, you know, make sure that I'm in a state of love. And then today, adding on to that, it's like, okay, they had to extend their flight because, you know, they're trying to get some more rest before they get on an airplane. So they're not, you know, contagious to anybody. And I go, it's not there anymore. And I'm out, you know, doing some yard work and the three dogs are out here and it's sunning because it was like 46 last night. And, enjoying the sunshine and listening to this again, or continuous, this lesson. And I go, okay, it goes back to it's all about me and being honest. If I get honest with myself, I have been that and, you know, wanted perfectionism also in my life. And so, okay, no point to try to project what somebody's going to say when they come home, you know. So anyway, I just thank you for, again, the commentary and how beneficial that it is. Even when we miss a week or so. So thank you.
Well, I appreciate the call and the input. And I would say that the thing that popped into my mind when you said that was, oh, I wonder who in my life has been pumping those negative thoughts into me to anticipate negativity, to be perfectionistic, et cetera. Mm-hmm. You might even take it to the next level and say, oh, this must be one of Dr. Michael Rice's power person dynamics playing it out in my mind, because I instantly went to creating an experience of stress, and then in the next moment I started haranguing myself with negative thoughts, which when my power person did that, I hated it the most. That's the thing they did that I hated the most. They would criticize and get negative and perfectionistic. And now my mind is telling me, hey, you know what, Tim, that's the perfect thing to do here. Why don't you start doing exactly what your power person did that you hated the most?
And that's very true.
So you start,
between my mom and
start
myself.
Exploring it that way.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then just remind myself who I am now.
Yeah, and say, wait, maybe if I don't like how that feels, perhaps I can choose again. Right, Diedrich Wolzak's saying, just it comes from the Course in Miracles. It says over and over again. Way of Mastery says over and over again, choice, choose, choose again. Understand that you only experience the effects of your choice. So thank you for that.
Absolutely.
Thank you for the input. I'm glad it's useful for you. I will mute you so you can listen to the second half. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I appreciate it.
How's everyone doing? How's the little one doing there?
Doing good, yeah. She's still not 100%, but she's a whole lot better than she was. She went back to school again today, and so she's getting back to normal. But thank you.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, have a wonderful show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio, and today is Tuesday, October the 4th, 2022, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And I believe this is just Anne 760. I think your hand is just left over from Dr. Tim, but did you have something else to say?
Okay, I was glad to hear about, you know, that aria. I was listening yesterday a little bit before I had to leave, but I'm up in South Carolina, dog sitting, and prayers and thoughts, please, for my daughter and son-in-law to fully recover. They were out in Colorado for a wedding, and then some symptoms came upon them, and so they already had a bed and breakfast. It's a Billy Graham ministry out in Colorado called Glen Ayers, and so it's just awesome that God is taking care of them. People are praying for them, the staff there and everything. It's just, I'd never heard of it, but now I'm acquainted with it. It's just amazing. So, I mean, if you're going to have to, you know, if it comes upon you with symptoms and you're going to be laid up, hey, why not in a castle, right?
Right, exactly.
With people who are, you know, believers and are quick to pray for you and help you out, you know, like going to the pharmacy for you and go, I mean, anyway.
Right.
So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, it's just amazing.
Is
but,
it just like
so,
the flu or
yeah,
something
just,
they didn't?
Well, they think it might be the virus again. They've had it once before, they changed they were able to change their flight this morning, and, instead of coming home today, they're coming home tomorrow. And she, has nurse background, so she knows that you don't want to get on the plane, number one, and spread it, but you also have, and so, you know, God just gave her the thought to, those people that were supposed to come into their room today. And my daughter offered then to upgrade the people that were doing their room to go to a upgraded room because, you know, even like she said, you need 12 hours to clean a room and leave it set before, you know, you'd want to put people. So that was just a God thing that way to give her the wherewithal to, you know, to think of that and offer that. So,
nice. Well, we hold the faith that they heal quickly.
Yes, that's what we're doing. And I'm enjoying the two times and the allowing of the way of mastery and what Dr. Tim was talking about. So I had called in my thoughts.
Right.
And he identified, again, I think of, it's just about me. No, it's about influence of the power person as well. So, the thoughts that I reflected with him were, you know, he picked up on the power person, and I agree because it, you know, brought up with that under my mom and then brought up under my stepfather. So it's just a matter of, okay, just another level of letting go, but I get that opportunity to do it here as well in South Carolina. So.
Right. Awesome. Well, you just take care of
you.
Yes.
You think that life was designed to give you opportunities, wouldn't you?
I know, right? But it's great. It is. The more I listen and the more, you know, and I've heard others go to different levels, it's okay that we're at different levels and we just keep, and you've alluded to that too as well, even with the years that you have in it, you know, this came up and hey, just one more level, one more deeper healing of something from, you know, the past, and it's like, it's all good. It's just, it's all good.
You know, we had talked yesterday about the TV series we're watching, or it's a Netflix series called The Crown, and we gave some examples from that, and last night, the session that we watched, Margaret Thatcher, it's, you know, going through the timeline right from her childhood up to, you know, they actually put the series on hold, the production of it. It was in production when she passed, the Queen passed. And last night, you know, Margaret Thatcher has taken the position of the Prime Minister of Britain. And she's invited out to Balmoral Castle to be with the family. And it's just such a perfect example of everybody's got a reality, you know. Each royal has their own picture, their own, you know, what it's about. And she comes out, and it's like stranger in a strange land. She is in culture shock, because she's always been nose to the grindstone. You know, dad trained her, she's worked all her life, and you know, here the royals are taking leisure, going out hunting, and just, I mean, the realities could not be more different, and the demonstration of it was so perfect of just exactly how culture shock works, and it was a pretty good session last night.
Wow. Okay. So I can relate that just coming from state to state, right?
Exactly.
I mean, you know, from and how things are done in your family, but in, you know, a sibling family or in my daughter's family. And you look at that and I go, okay, that's not the way I do things. But I'm not in that culture right now. I'm in her culture. Or their culture.
Exactly,
and
right.
In this town, they do things a little different. And it's like you start to go, okay, but that's just the way it is. And only if it's directed at me, then out of love, I'm going to, you know, speak up. But it's really not. It's just observing, like, you know, the way a master is talking about now and allowing it just, oh, okay, that's just the way it is. It's, I mean, anyway. It's a great journey, and I hear you talk about that a lot.
Sweet.
I'm starting to get that. Yeah. Anyway,
awesome.
You guys have a – I'm going to get moving with these dogs and other things. So thank you so much.
All right, you have a blessed one. All right, lots of love. Blessings.
Lots of love. Bye.
Well, Miss Jeannie.
Speaking of the realities that they had in the episode we watched last night is – that there had been a neighbor who entertained different people, and it was like a game sport for them, and the person wounded a humongous stag, like a 15-pointer, but it crossed over the creek into the Queen's land, and so they weren't allowed to follow it, and so the people had contacted the Queen told them, you know, that there was a wounded stag now on their property. And so everybody in the family, including the Queen, had gone out hunting to try to find it, to put it out of its misery. And they came back in late. Well, Margaret Thatcher and her husband had read on the sheet in their room the protocol that dinner was at 6, and it was a dress, black tie affair and all that. So they came downstairs all dressed up. And the family had just come in from hunting, so they were all in this, you know, khaki garb and were dirty, filthy, and all that. And so Margaret Thatcher's mind was, oh, this was a test, telling us we had to be all dressed up, and then here they are, you know, all grubby and grimy. And so her reality was that they did that on purpose for her. And it was far from the truth in that. And, of course, then they all went and got cleaned up and dressed, and then they went on to dinner. But it was just, you know, that's a good example, too, of a reality versus
everybody
actuality.
Showed up in, right. Yeah, everybody showed up in the space with a totally and completely different construct in their minds, and conflicts, pardon me, that ensued were just interesting. And then the Margaret Thatcher left you know, their invitation early, and they're like, oh my God, we've never had a, we can't get rid of them when a prime minister comes to visit here. We have trouble getting rid of them. And here she is leaving early. We've never had that happen before. And Thatcher's like, excuse me, I've got work to do. I'm out of here. And the royals are trying to convince her of how good it can be to take an intermission and just get a different view of life. It's just interesting to watch how realities conflict, how each individual mind has its own construct. And if one person resonates a construct that's out of harmony with truth in another person, how that other person, I mean, it was just person after person after person projecting on everybody else in the group. It was just a great demonstration of how it all works.
For sure.
And, yeah. Do we have anything happening in the chat room?
No, it's quiet in the
let's
chat room. And nobody has
doing.
Their hand up, but I see Susan on the switchboard.
Right.
So let's see how she's doing after her procedure yesterday.
That. Yes.
Welcome, Miss Susan. Can you talk?
Hey. Yeah. Hi.
Welcome, young lady.
Thank you so much. Thanks for asking. I am.
How
feeling...
did things go yesterday?
They went really well. I had to stay on a gurney for 5.5 hours till they could get to me. The hospitals are just so backed up, and it was a wonderful young Asian doctor who took care of me finally. And he told me he had a case ahead of me, and he said he hoped it wouldn't take too long. Well, it took a very long time, and I learned that the person ahead of me had terrible complications. And boy, I know from Jonathan how that could be. So, I, as you know, I tuned in, and you kept me company. It wasn't for quite a while after that that they finally took me, but, man, do I feel better. It's so good to have a proper ticker machine in there.
Huge. Whole new level of energy.
Energy and calm. I've been realizing, you know, the grant, I should take that evaluation code again. No, I'm just joking. I think I was telling the truth there as much as I could, but just so nice to have a normal, we don't realize how tuned our hearts are to our selves. And
it's literally another brain.
It is. And to have one that's sort of approximating like a robot, man, was so different. So this is just great. Ah, thank you so much.
Having your whole brain back. That's awesome.
In a certain way. And I don't know if my friend Michael on, but Michael did me a great turn. I have to keep my right arm pretty much immobilized for about a week just so that everything can heal. And of course I'm doing stuff, but I asked because I'm in charge of the food for the refugees. I said, you're going to be my sous chef today. And he came in with me, and I, you know, I said, now go do this and do that. And he was great. He did everything I asked him to, wash the dishes, grab stuff from high shelves, cut things up. Anyway, it was, and people were so wonderful because they saw I had an immobilized arm. They said, what happened? And here are these people who don't speak English. I'm trying to explain, you know, with body language. I showed them the bandage, and I showed them the how things all, you know, it's a machine. They thought I'd hurt my arm. No. Anyway, it was very sweet. Such compassion, I'm telling you, and such amazing people in the hospital.
Nice.
You know, you're lying there about to go under, and you've got maybe 9 people around you fussing with this wire and that foot and that pillow, and they're pulling you this way and that, and they said, just let yourself relax. We're just going to do what we need to do and get you in position. Everybody, hi, my name is Chris. My name is Donna. They were all so, it's amazing. There are such caring, loving people in the medical field.
Mm-hmm.
They just pour
yes.
themselves out. And my own yes. nurse, who was with me the whole time, she does 10-hour shifts every day. It's amazing. So there's a lot of good stuff going on. in the medical world. They're trying very hard to take care of us. Some of it's probably not the right thing, but in my case, it was very much the right thing. So,
certainly genius in your case, and that sounds like really awesome support, and that's fabulous. I have a question.
Boy.
So are you at the church doing food right now?
No, I'm home now, but I do
Tuesday
mornings at the church doing food for what's amounted to, as I told you, a ton more refugees than we've ever had before coming in.
Right.
All different levels, all different languages. So,
my invitation to you is that you go lay down and breathe and take care of yourself. Your body needs to heal. You've had quite
a
shock. away. And 10 hours later, you're at the church doing food. Hello?
Oh, yeah.
Hello?
I'm not sick, Michael.
It didn't say you were sick. That's wonderful. That's one of the problems of having a healing procedure like that sometimes is that we go, now I can go back to all my old busyness so I don't ever have to look at what's chasing me inside, and I don't give my body time to heal. You had surgery. You had a full anesthetic. You need to give your body time to process that out and move through it. Please give yourself at least a couple of days where whatever's on your calendar, clear it and just be still and be with yourself and let that, you know, while it was, it strengthened your heart, so there's a whole new level of vitality, notice that it also was an assault on your system. You know, general anesthetic is a huge assault. Surgery, even minor surgery, and this was not, I don't think from the sound of it, minor, it takes time for your body to knit that energy back together. So please give yourself time to do that.
Nice. Well,
give yourself time.
In a twilight sleep. It wasn't the whole anesthetic. I wasn't aware.
They didn't do full anesthetic. Oh, that's good.
No, they didn't.
And oh, good.
I was out of it so fast. I said, "Wow, that's an amazing! It wears off so fast." So
good. Well, I'm glad to hear you didn't
hear you.
Do full anesthetic.
Yeah, I don't like to if they can possibly do it. And that's why I got my friend Michael. I was going to call in and say I put the food there, but somebody else is going to have to do the food. But I thought, no, I can do the food, and I'll invite him. And he was just what I needed. It was great, and it was great for him, too,
nice
I think.
Support.
I think he felt cheerful about himself.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm wondering if he's on, because he said he was coming on. Do you, I think it's a 904 number.
You see Michael's number, Jeannie? Looks like he's not. Jeannie, you're on mute.
He is?
No.
He is not?
He is not on.
Not
no.
here.
Oh, maybe I'll run downstairs and see if
maybe
I can invite him on.
Maybe you could gently walk downstairs.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
No need for running.
Yeah, okay.
Please. Take care of yourself.
I'm telling you, I feel so good. I mean, I have, you know, a sore chest, but man, the rest of me, wow, great.
Yeah,
hang on.
That's awesome.
Oh, his light is off.
And
while
you're walking down the steps, I got a text from Magda, and she said, please explain what procedure you're talking about. She's not up to speed with what you had done.
Oh, thanks, Magda. Thanks, everybody. I have had a pacemaker for 22 years, and every 10-ish years you have to have a new battery put in, basically a new pacemaker. Once they've installed the wires that go down into your heart, they hope they'll last the whole time. And it looks as if mine are okay. One of them, they're watching it, but they didn't have to install new wires, which would have meant general anesthetic and under for a while. But so it's just a new pacemaker battery. So I've had this for 22 years. It saves my life. It's been absolutely great to have it. Everybody thinks, oh, my God, are you okay? And I'm so okay. This is where science is just so miraculously amazing. because now it can communicate and tell my heart what I'm doing. Like if I run, my heart wouldn't know that I'm running because the wires got scarred during a bad time 22 years ago. And so now the pacer can tell the heart what it should be doing. And it's very fine-tuned. I'm telling you, it's great.
That's awesome that they can go in and revitalize that that support device. That's really fabulous.
Isn't that amazing? It's
definitely.
Yeah.
Amazing minds.
Yeah. Heart's fine. It was just the wires, they call it heart block. You stop being able to get messages from the brain to the heart.
A communication thing.
It's a communication thing. Talk about a metaphor, right, Michael?
Yay. How many times in the last few weeks have we talked about responsibility communication with your grandson?
Oh, and my God.
To hold him responsible for his communications.
Yeah, well, one of the hard things about yesterday, the hardest thing by far, was as soon as I came to, they gave me my stuff, my phone, and I had a bunch of messages from him. And Tim and I had, boy, I really would like to ask about this. If nobody else's hand is up, is anybody's hand up? If Michael's
your
up,
hand
I
is
want
up.
To give him.
You
I
are on
that night. Tim and I have been giving him an allowance. We're also paying for his car garage and his tuition and his food and his apartment. And the deal was he would stay off stuff of every kind and be respectful. I've told you this before.
Right.
And he has not lived up either one of those, although he's telling us he's clean, but I'm almost positive he's using, but I have no guarantee. The other grandson tells me he is, but the other grandson is also addicted to stuff, and I don't know who to believe. But when I talk to Jacob, sometimes he's very different. He's kind of spacey, or he gets very, very hyper, or he gets belligerent. And he was on a belligerence roll that I just couldn't believe, and it was texts. So here I'm looking at these words like, you and your husband are liars. You promised to pay me an allowance, and now you're taking it away. I gave him a lot of notice. I said, you've been talking about getting a job, and we're trying to get you on your feet so that you can take care of yourself as much as possible. I'm far too busy for that. You are crippling me. You pulled the rug out. You're liars. I knew you'd do this. You are dishonest. And he went from there. It's just unbelievable what he does. And it went on and on and on. And I kept engaged, which was a mistake. My daughter read me the Riot Act this morning. She said, Mommy, gets like that with me too. You just tell him you can't talk right now. You're going to hang up or you're going to block him even because he keeps up the tirades. I must have, no exaggeration, 6 pages of the ugliest texting. This is clearly a guy who has become just like his father, and I know what triggered him. It was that we were taking away $100 a week allowance, which is a lot of money. And, you know, he tells me that we stole his cat, the cat who is staying with us, because he didn't want her. Now he's saying we stole her. He's gotten another cat. He was counting on us paying the cat bills, and we said we would pay the cat bills. And he said, are you still lying? You mean it? I can't trust you. And if I'm nice to you, I'm just kissing your, you know what.
Mm-hmm.
So, you talked about gullibility and keeping believing. I think now, after this, I really get it. That until and if he changes, he's not going to. And I'm much better having had this confrontation with him than I might have been without the work.
Right.
But I guess my question is, I'll just, do I give up on him? I can hold the loving space, but I don't
think I will ever trust him again.
Well, my offering would be
that mood.
Yeah. My offering would be that what's been is to hold him accountable. He made an agreement. He didn't keep his agreement. What was your agreement with him? Then hold up your end of the bargain. And if your end of the bargain
exactly
was,
what
if you're using, and you're going into hostility and fear, or hostility and abuse, then we stop. We're just not going to do this. We're not going to support that. And, you know, sadly, and it's well known, and you've done some of the Al-Anon stuff. Sadly, it's well known that every alcoholic and drug addict will abuse and manipulate until they wear or empty the pockets of everybody around them. And it comes to a point where people will just not have anything to do with them. And
yeah.
It's also well known that, generally speaking, they have to hit bottom. You don't have to give up on him, but I'd certainly hold him accountable, or else you move from support into enabling. And right now, from what you're telling me, you're enabling. And at this point, if it were me, I'd say, okay, Jonathan, or pardon me, not Jonathan, your
Jacob.
Son, but okay, Jacob, you know, enough is enough. We're going to drop out of the conversation. That means we're going to drop out of everything. You do what you need to do. You're on your own. And let him fend for himself. And he may hit a bottom that begins his upward journey. But for most, until they hit a bottom, they don't turn around. And, you know, many people are gullible enough to stand by and go, well, I'll help. He needs help. I'll help. Like, no, that's part of the manipulation. That's just part of the alcohol, drug addict manipulation. That's how that mind operates. And it's unfortunate.
So you would, college and everything, you wouldn't pay for tuition or anything?
Well, I wouldn't take away anything. I would say, I'm going to hold you accountable. I agreed to pay these things in return for something from you, and you've chosen not to do it, so I'm going to stop paying for it. That's all. And let him do the free fall that he does. Now, as we talked about before, because he has threatened suicide, you know, there's got to be the stand of, I'm either going to play along and enable this behavior forever, because if you keep enabling, you'll enable it pretty much forever, or I'm going to drop out and let him do what he needs to do. And that may include, and, you know, I've seen it happen before with people I've worked with, that someone ends their own life, especially if that's been their conversation previously and they've threatened it. And, you know, that's a threat that's used to beat and abuse people, and he may follow through with that threat just to be whatever it is that is going on for him. You know, it's a tough call to make, you know.
When he was in rehab last, they said to me, if you can keep him in school and he does well, which he is, he's getting straight A's. He's just like his dad. His dad went through Yale Law School, racked up a huge debt, married my daughter. She went to work and paid off his debts. 25 years later, she learns that she's just got to get out of that marriage. Here's this boy not racking up a debt. But the people said, give him the 2 years.
Yes, he is.
Have him do what?
He's racking up a debt. You're paying it every month.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that detail is there as well.
I can't picture paying for anything. And just, I can't.
I understand.
I can see him through 2 years, and then he knows that's the end of all support. He knows that. We've made it very clear. And I don't know whether buying 2 years' time is a good idea or a bad idea. But
well, if your guidance is that that's what's appropriate, I'd listen to that guidance and do it. But I certainly wouldn't accept any more abuse from him.
No, I'm not. I mean, I say I'm not. My daughter says, Mom, I even block him. When he starts, I block him. And then we get back, you know, days later, there'll be some communication somehow. And he may apologize. It never means much, but he gets on an even keel again. And he has apologized very minimally to me. He said, sorry, I messed with you. That's the most of an apology he's ever gotten.
Hmm. And so, he knows he's messing with you. He knows darn well he's messing
with you.
Yeah, he
does. Yeah.
So it's just, I guess, a point of what is it for you to do, and are you willing to be messed with in return for doing it? And if you are, then do it and be happy about it. You know, stand as a space of love, extend love in that direction. If you have to cut communication because it's abusive, and say, well, we'll pay the bills.
Yeah, I know Tim wants to do that too. So I'm going to bring this up in my Al-Anon meeting tomorrow, and they'll probably say the very same thing. But I am not willing at this point to take everything away. I've already taken away what he thinks is just his lifeline of $100 a week, and he has to get a job. He's so PO'd about that.
It's a difficult. So. No, here's my offering. He's not PO'd about that. He's not PO'd at you. He's just PO'd. And anybody or anything will do.
Yeah.
Object of blame for it. You know, he's very firmly ensconced in the religion of blame. And his hostility, he has hostility not because of anything you've ever done or his mother's ever done. He has hostility because he has hostility.
Mm.
That's all. And if he can... If he's learned, and it sounds like he's learned well from his father, that there are arenas in which he can use hostility to get money. And so he does it.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like her, your daughter's husband for 25 years was able to manipulate her out of her money by using this hostility game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know that hostility was taken out by him on you as well. And so...
Yeah.
Make a choice as to how you're going to play and then play and choose to stay connected to love as you do it. That's my best input.
That's good.
And when something less than that comes up, do your next piece of work.
Absolutely. Okay.
Keep that
Thank
heart happy, healthy, and rocking.
It totally is. Amazing. I feel as if I...
That's awesome.
I lost 10... I got back about 15 years of vitality.
Nice. Nice. Well, please rest in long enough for the physical aspect of it to heal.
Mm-hmm.
Take
okay.
care of you.
I will. Thanks.
All right,
Nicole.
Young lady.
I will.
All right. We appreciate you.
Appreciate you, too.
Blessings. Give Tim a hug for us.
I will. Thanks, Michael.
All right. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Then we have a hand up.
Well, let's go for it.
And it's 808. I believe it's Miss Roma. We haven't heard from you in a while. Hi there.
Hi.
Welcome. Hey,
How
young lady.
How are you guys doing?
We're rocking. How do you be? I was working in the garden all morning this morning, getting ready for winter.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
we're getting
I'm
down
working...
into the 40s the next few days. So, excuse me. Go ahead.
Right. Ready. Well, it's a full-time job being a farmer. That's for sure.
Well, thank goodness we're just gardeners, not farmers.
Oh, a gardener, yeah, okay. I got contacted a couple of weeks ago by a man that I had never heard of who is writing. He's been working for the last 10 years on a book about my brother's life. It turns out, and I didn't realize this until these last 2 weeks, that my brother was very famous.
Really?
And I didn't really. I had no idea.
In what
he
arena
was
he famous?
Yeah. Huh? He's composer.
In what arena was he famous? Oh, really?
Oh, he's an avant-garde late 20th century composer. He died in 2006. Yeah.
Hmm. Well, bless his heart.
And it is strange because all of his friends, seems like everybody I knew, his wife, his first wife, and his best friend, they were all world famous. They all became world famous together. So it was kind of cool. Anyway.
What's his name?
James Tenney. You can
James
you can look him up on Wikipedia.
Well, that's what I'm doing right now as we speak.
His wife's name was Carolee Schneemann. And his best friend's name
Tenney
was Dan Brackage.
T-E-N-N-Y?
N-E-E-M-A-N.
Oh, S-E-H.
Oh, T-E-N-N-E-Y, yeah. He and I look alike. If you
works.
See the page, you'll see the physical resemblance in our faces.
Oh, I'm actually looking on Spotify, and there's an album, his selected works from 1961 to 1969.
What's the name of it?
So if you've got, that's what it's called, James Tenney, Selected Works, 1961 to 69, Collage 1, Blue Suede, Analog 1, Noise Study, Dialogue,
yeah.
Phases
a
for
lot
Edward
of it really
Frere,
sounds
Varese.
Like, I personally don't like his music all that much. My favorite of his music are the three ragtime pieces that he wrote, but I get those from Eric, from the guy I'm working with, because I couldn't find them online. But, yeah, his music can be very bombastic. I mean, assaulting. In the audio sense, it can assault you. But I experience the impacts of the music that I like to listen to. My favorite one, I think, is the In Memoriam for John Cage. Apparently, he loved John Cage very dearly. John Cage was another very famous 20th century composer. He loved and worked with him for many years, and I can feel in his memorial to John Cage his love for the man. So it's been an interesting process, and the man who's writing the book has really opened a can of worms with me. I'm remembering things and discovering things that I forgot long ago. It's quite fascinating.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a very enlivening process. I feel like I've dropped 10 years age-wise because there's
awesome.
So much vitality in reconnecting with my youth and all of that, you know. So it's kind of a cool process.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
Nice.
But,
sounds like
you know,
a new opening for you.
Yeah, it really is, and I have no idea what's going to happen now. There was
probably
a point in time
next.
Where we... my father wrote a book, and I took it to India with me, and when I left India, I left it in a storage unit telling myself that I would have to come back to India because this is the most prized possession I have.
Right.
And so Eric, as soon as I told him about that, he said, I'll go with you. So for about a week, we were thinking that we were going to go to India together, but he actually found in York University, York University in Toronto. Apparently there's a copy of the book is entitled Is. And when I told Eric the title of the book, he checked on it and found it. At York University, so we don't have to go to India.
So what's the title of the book? Is as in I-S?
I-S. I-S. It's,
and who's
I don't
it written
think
by?
It's ever been. My father, Carl Tenney. It's my father's book.
Interesting. Cool.
Yeah. So anyway, it's just it's an amazing time. I spent about 3 hours this morning writing things about various aspects of my childhood and things like that that involved my brother and my father. And so it's been quite a journey. But the reason I called is because for a long, long time, I have been waiting to hear when the lady that just got off the phone, what's her name? Susan, yeah.
Right.
When Susan shares, I keep waiting to hear her answers for what number 1B are. I want to know what she's feeling when she's dealing with her grandson. And I it's not that I want to know what she's feeling. It's that I want her to know what I want her to be really clear about what this whole situation with her grandson triggers in her emotionally, and I want her to do worksheets on those emotions. And I've been wanting to say this for a long, long time, and it's none of my business, but I do listen to the show, and every time I hear the conversation giving her advice, I get frustrated because I want her to do a worksheet. I want her to deal with her emotions.
If her hand is still there, and you know, my take is she's done a significant amount of that, but if her hand is still up, or Susan, if you're there and you'd like to respond, that would be cool. Let's see what happens.
Parent, power person, worksheets, you know, looking at the power person thing, worksheets, you should see the stack of worksheets on him. I often use the one right on the iPhone. And,
number
and,
one worksheet, the first original worksheet, why is this happening to me again, worksheet.
Right.
That's what I want you to do.
Yeah.
I want to know what your I want you to write those emotions in number 1B.
You do? Oh.
Uh-huh.
What makes you think I didn't? What makes you think I haven't put
What are?
Well,
I've never heard you talk about the emotions. I've heard you talk about the circumstances. But I have not heard you talk about your emotions. What does this whole situation trigger in you?
A lot of things, and I have been, I promise you, I have been doing worksheets on them. Mostly I just feel frustrated, stung, punished, and those are things that go right on the worksheet.
Is there a pattern of punishment in your life that goes back before you ever met your grandson?
Oh, yeah, it's, you know,
what's the earliest pattern of punishment you can remember?
I guess I've lost your I don't know what you're saying.
You said there was a pattern of feeling punished long before your grandson, and my question to you is, what's your earliest memory of feeling punished? It may go all the way back to when you were a baby or born. I just found it when I was born. I did a worksheet this morning because my mother wanted both of us to die when she was giving birth to us, giving birth to me. And, you know, I just did a worksheet that involved that, you know. So it goes all the way back to your birth sometimes, or maybe past lives. But what's the earliest memory you have of feeling like you're being punished?
Breathing with
mother
you both.
Did want, what did you say, Michael?
I say breathing with you both.
Okay. Well, one reason I don't bring this up is because I have done so much, I've had so much airtime with Michael and Jeannie and Tim Hayes about my early childhood. And I don't feel as if that is a story that I can say, and I can say, well, there it is again, but it isn't something I have felt I need to do on the radio show anymore. Basically, when something comes up, I deal with it pretty fast. I'm an expert at doing walking, talking worksheets, which I know
the feelings that come up for you.
and doing them on the iPhone if I'm in a doctor's office or something, or somewhere where I don't have my paper. So,
all right. Needed to let y'all know that's what I'm hearing, and I would just encourage you to share your emotional reality with us on these phone calls. Not the circumstantial reality. We've heard that 1,000 times. But I would like to hear you experiencing through your emotional reality.
There's been a bit, probably there's been a bit much of that, and that's a good thing to know. I will be mindful of how much of that I bring onto the radio show. That's good to know.
Well, you mean withholding how much you bring onto the radio show?
Well, I often talk about the grand boys on the radio show. And if
if it seems like overdoing. I mean, I do need feedback about that, and I would appreciate it if it's too much.
No, it's not too much, honey. The thing is, there's a part missing, and that is how you feel. You tell us about them and what they're doing to you, but you don't tell us. I haven't heard you on the radio program experiencing your emotions with the support of our love for you. I have not heard that. And we do love you very, very much. I love you very much. You were an absolutely amazing partner when I was writing my book many years ago. So I dearly appreciate you, even though I can't remember anything anymore. I can't remember. Oh, my God, I can't remember anybody's name. But anyway, I know I love you, so.
Thank you, Roma.
Well, that presence of love is an awesome gift.
Yep, it sure is.
And thanks, Michael, for being that presence for us.
And, you know, when I get my opportunities, I get my opportunities too. Don't
yeah,
we all?
Yeah, it's a circle. It's a circle of love that we are creating all around the planet.
Well, something that I've been working on and looking at recently is this whole idea of the willingness to be with the truth, and that when we're not, you know, when that honoring truth is not happening, that with that dishonoring of truth, with, you know, living in the lies that the culture's taught us to tell, you know, we exclude. Say it again.
That, living with the lie that somebody out there is doing it to us.
Yes, exactly.
That's basic lie in the culture.
Yes, yeah, it's the universal religion, the one world religion that everybody's afraid of, is the religion of blame, and that blame excludes truth. And when we do live in that blame, we exclude the actual presence of love, because this is kind of like something that's been I've been processing for me personally, is that we exclude that presence of love because the false occupies the space that was designed for truth.
The F-A-U-L-T-S? What?
No, F-A-L-S-E, the false. Occupies the space that was designed for truth.
Exactly. And that's what we're trying to get.
And the genius of Yeshua, yeah, and the genius of Yeshua knowing how to collapse that false so that there is this, as the Course says it, this clean and open space within our minds is just monumental.
Yeah.
That's kind of one of the things I've been working on recently, and the step into the willingness to honor truth fully, 100%, wherever it goes, whatever it does.
Yeah, which can be very scary. You know,
it can't be scary, but it can certainly bring up fear.
Yeah, right, if you're carrying fear.
Yeah. Well, there won't be scary involved in anything if you're not carrying fear.
Exactly.
So if I say it can be scary, I'm now in denial. I'm now pretending something outside of me is causing my scary, but the truth is something's bringing up my scary, and when I choose to own it, then I can once again collapse it and create the space for truth.
Well, I think scary is what's up for planet Earth with all of these crazy battles and wars and, you know, rockets being shot out of North Korea, you know. Oh, my gosh.
There's certainly plenty of it going on, isn't there?
Yeah, and I love the fact that it comes down to either one or the other. It's either love or fear, right?
That's it. That's it. Bottom line.
I mean, it's complicated. But it's challenging.
And of course, the fear wants to escape. And its main escape hatch is blame. Again, that's, I've been realizing that, you know, there's a big conversation, especially in a lot of fundamental Christianity, about this one world religion that's coming. And it's like, no, no, it's here. It's been here forever. It's the religion of blame. It's the religion of victimhood. You know, that's the one world religion. It's been here forever. It's not something that's coming. It's here.
I hate to hear you put one and religion in that sentence together about blame. That is not the reality of God. Religion has to do with the divine creator of the whole universe.
Absolutely. I'm with you. And, so hear what I'm saying for a second. What I'm saying is there's a lot of conversation about a one world religion that's being formed, and it's going to be satanic, and it's going to take over the world, and it's trying to take over everybody. I'm saying that conversation that people are having about this feared one world religion has been here forever, and it is the religion of blame and victimhood. And it's time for us for the participants in that religion to get out of that religion and step into the truth. What is the truth? The Creator is love. If I'm not connected with that, I have a problem.
Okay.
And the thing that takes most people out of it is that blame game and the disconnect
projection.
From love. Projection. Yeah, yeah. And the genius of Yeshua to show us how to delete it is just, it's when you, as the capacity to see the bigger picture, bigger, and how deep it is, grows in us. To me, it just becomes more mind-boggling that Yeshua 2,000 years ago said, okay, here's how you handle it. It's like, whew.
You know what amazes me about you, Michael? I've been doing this work for 33 years with you. And the worksheet, yeah, it's gone through evolutions and changed and blah, blah, blah. But basically, it's been the same. It's been guiding, a guide. These worksheets have been a guide, a printed guide as to how to get inward to the inward truth of our reality. And stop projecting. It's always been that way. For 33 years, it's always been that way.
Yes.
And
yeah, the
I
core of what Yeshua
myself,
taught is there.
How did you...
In every one of them.
What did you say?
The core...
Did you say?
...is in the core of it, of Yeshua's teachings. The core tool is there in every one of them. I've been testing and trying out different trim to put around it to make it more friendly, more usable, more functional.
Right.
But the core is the Yeshua 2,000 years ago. It's not mine. I had the good fortune of discovering it, but it sure isn't mine. It's his 100%. And, yes, it's in every worksheet I've developed for the last 40 years.
And I guess I'm curious about your process in the discovery of it.
Well, you know, you've been engaged in my process for the last 33 years, so you're pretty well acquainted.
You've been
you're probably
doing
as acquainted as anybody on the show. 50. The Aramaic, specifically, starting with the forgiveness process, was about 42 or 43 years ago. But overall, it's been about 50, a little better than 50 years. So you've been around for 33 of it. So you're well acquainted with my process. You've been watching it for 33 years.
Yeah, right.
You've been engaged in it.
My understanding is that this grew for you out of your relationship with the Course in Miracles. Is that true?
No. It grew with me.
No.
It grew for me out of my relationship with the first century Aramaic teachings of Yeshua. And then I started to understand it from the Course. But the Course came second.
Okay, so there's a relationship there, and I got it. Okay, good. Yeah. That was what
and
I...
And it all started with the Kabbalist manuscript.
Did you
That's
find that
started
before
with the
you
Kabbalist
found...
manuscript.
Did that show up in your life before the Course in Miracles did?
No, actually, the Course in Miracles was there first. The Course in Miracles was there. Miracles was probably there about... let's see, I don't know... a year or so before.
And then what happened? How did the
Coors
manage show up in your life?
Well, what happened? Yeah, well, what happened is that I had the course and I was working with the course, but I didn't see the core. Like, for instance, the core of the forgiveness process is shabak, cancel the goal. Yeah. Now, that's in the Course in Miracles in black and white, but it doesn't say cancel the goal. Here's what it says in lesson 305, and it's exactly the same definition of forgiveness as Yeshua had in the Course, and here's what it says. Let go all the things you think you want, your trifling treasure put away, and leave a clean and open space within your mind for Christ to come, for the active presence of love. So that's the Course's words. Now, I'd read that before I ran into it in the Aramaic and was like, what does that mean? Okay, well, it's a nice phrase. It's fun. So what? But when I got to the Aramaic and in the Kabor's manuscript and found, oh, the word forgive is shebag and it means to cancel. And then when I finally understood that when you cancel a goal, you collapse perception. Oh, let go the goal, cancel the goal, and collapse all the things you think you want. Now you've got a clean and open space within your mind. And, you know, I mean, for me, that, as I shared it just a few minutes ago, has kind of come full circle and just an insight in another way. It's like, oh, when I don't honor truth, I exclude love. And I fill the space with something false. I mean, that's the whole thing right from day one with Yeshua's teachings and with the Course. But I didn't have the brain cells to recognize what I was reading in the Course until I understood it from the Aramaic. And then I went, oh, let go all the things. Cancel your goal.
Oh, yeah.
Cancel your goal. Leave a clean and open space. Collapse your perception. And now love comes. I mean, it's as plain as a nose on my face now that I have the brain cells. But when I didn't have the brain cells from the Aramaic, that didn't make any sense to me. And I've worked with thousands of people around the Course, and I've never met anybody that understands from the Course in Miracles how to do forgiveness. Not one person. The highest level teachers, and I've listened to them. I've watched them on YouTube, and you know,
students that have. It takes you to the gate, but it doesn't have the key.
Yeah. Got to have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. Which is just, you know, like
you gotta
the brilliance
the goal.
Of Yeshua.
Shebang.
You got to cancel.
That was
exactly. Yeah. What is it that I want from this object of attention that's triggering this pained perceptual construct into activity so that I exclude truth from my mind? Oh, so I'm going to cancel that goal. I'm going to let go of this trifling treasure. Now there's a clean space within me for healing to take place. And it's like...
It's so exquisite.
That's my point exactly in this whole conversation. It's like as I'm enlarging my understanding of the world, the whole dynamic, it just becomes more profound that 2,000 years ago, Yeshua said, here, if you have the eyes to see and the ears to hear, here you go. This is it. It's like 2,000 years ago. You think about that, and it's like, for me, it's mind-boggling. And I certainly feel blessed that I got to travel the path that took me to it.
Definitely in good company with your leadership there.
Hey, appreciation and blessings to you.
Okie doke. Thank you so much. It's great to talk to you again.
All right, blessings. Take care.
Aloha.
Aloha. Hi, Ms. Susan. Any other thoughts for you? We've got about a minute left.
Oh, thank you. I'm sitting here listening to all this. I haven't heard Roma's voice in a long time, and I felt a little bit I can't find the word, back to the wall. I felt as if I was doing something wrong and had to do a quick processing while she was talking, that I hadn't been on the radio.
So she brought that old core issue up for you. She brought that old core issue up for you again. How cool is that? Man, talk about service.
Shut up, Michael. I mean,
how sweet is that?
From doing
awesome.
Work.
Anyway,
I appreciate
what fun we are.
Yeah. I know.
So anyway, and I have a little photo to send to you and Jeannie. It's of our new pastor and one of the women and the two dogs. I tried to send it from the hospital, but it wouldn't go. But I'm going to try it now and see if it'll go. It's just adorable. He's sitting there in his regalia.
Cool.
And a friend of mine and the two dogs. So anyway.
Well, maybe at some point I'll get to talk to him.
That would be great.
Cool.
Okay. Well, I know it's 2 o'clock. No more talking.
The show's going to cut us off any second, right? Mid-sentence probably, but that's okay. All right. We cherish you and blessings. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Have a blessed day. All righty.